We have begun.
Well, that's good news, but I'll tell you right off the bat, we have a problem.
Houston?
Yeah, Houston, we have a problem. That movie was just on TV before we started, by the way. I don't know what to call this podcast, Mike. I mean, we've become so efficient, so good, and so productive at what we do that this is an outlier. It isn't the January podcast because we recorded and we've already released the January podcast, and it's not the February podcast because we're going to record that in a couple of weeks. It's still January. We'll call this the special edition, extra bonus, Happy New Year podcast, listeners podcast. How's that sound?
God, I'm worried about you.
What would you do without me?
This is the January podcast.
No, it isn't.
Yeah,
Is it?
it
All right. Well,
is.
okay. All right.
I'll
Yeah.
give you a do-over on that.
No, it's good. We're good. We're good. Let's just keep rolling.
I should point out, by the way, that one of my ops guys, Chad Raincourt, pointed out that in the rebuilding of the website somehow, some of our earlier shows were up there, but like with very, very small sizes, and there was really no content to them. So I'm going to be reloading. I'm going to be reloading those shows. So I'm just letting anybody know who's tried to listen to an old show to catch up that if it seems exceptionally short, that's not really the way it was.
It feels like, on the rare occasions that these things happen, and it's been, over, I guess, 11 years now, coming up on 11 years. There's been a few instances where there's been a breakdown in the technology.
As a guy who's in technology on a daily basis, I would say that's basically Apollo program type remarkable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But the fallout from that is almost never ending. It's like a scar. You know, it
Yeah.
just doesn't go away.
Tell me about it.
We thank our listeners for being patient, and we will continue to work to get the content back up to where it needs to be. We've been dealing with a lot of unusual occurrences, not the least of which, well, I guess not totally unusual because it is January in New England, but we've had some brutal weather, Mike.
Well, a friend and customer of mine, Tom Gazier in Minnesota, I actually messaged him on Facebook and I said, "Look, come down here and get your weather and take it back where it belongs." And he said something to the effect of, "You should see what our weather's been like. I think they've had -23 temperatures, that kind of thing." So
Yeah.
I guess it is relative. But what I wanted to tell him was, well, if you're in Minnesota, what do you expect? We
Are you
do
just?
not expect that here.
I've got a lot of good friends in Minnesota. In fact, I was talking to Gary Hansen, one of them, the other day, and one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet, and he cured his winter blues by going to the Caribbean.
You've got to do something, I would think. That's just, if what we had for the last, I guess it was a couple of weeks of it, basically, roughly speaking, you know how I don't like to leave the compound. Well, during that time, I was driving to the mailbox, and you know where my mailbox is.
It's not far. It's a couple of speed bumps away.
I am not exaggerating.
And just to touch back on the Minnesota thing, all of my Minnesota friends actually deserve the weather that they get. But the weather has been so bizarre, Mike, that meteorologists are actually making up names for the storms that we're getting.
Like the
Like
bomb
this, like
cyclone.
the bomb cycle. What the hell? I'm 55 years old. I've lived through a lot of really bad winters in the Boston area. I have never heard of a bomb cyclone in my life.
That's because there is no such thing.
Exactly. Thank you.
And there was one weather guy who used the term, and then he cringed and he said, "This is not a weather term."
Exactly. It's just people sitting around a room saying, "How do we jack up our weather ratings? Let's make up a word."
Well, it does go along with the general climate of hysteria that the increasing hysteria that we have in the country. So maybe we can chalk it off to that.
So we had near hurricane force winds last week, last Thursday, accompanied by well, here a foot and a half of snow, and the beautiful thing about that, Mike, was that I went out about halfway through the storm because the best way to get rid of it if you don't have a plow, is to take it in chunks. I figured I'd take one swipe at the driveway and then go out at the end of the storm. For every shovel full of snow that I threw out of the driveway, about half of it came back in my face.
I don't doubt that. I had a little different experience down here. Now, we're geographically, I'm pretty close to, Fall River and Swansea, right?
Yes.
I could be in Swansea in like 10 minutes on the highway. Well,
Lucky you.
Swansea got 15 inches of snow. We got about, I usually judge it by the porch in front of my workshop, and we got about like 6, 8 inches tops. So when I went out there, I thought, piece of cake. And that's because we were sort of on that rain snow line, the Cape got almost nothing. So I go out there, and first thing I do is I'm trying to get my downstairs basement door, the layout room door open, and I had to really put some muscle into it because it was frozen shut. And then I tried to move some of the snow immediately on adjacent to the door, and it really was, to use a cliche, like shoveling wet cement. It was ridiculous. And I had to use a sledgehammer, I kid you not, from the inside to get the front doors on my tractor shed open because they had frozen to the ground. So our problem was we had a rain changing to ice, so we had like an ice storm to deal with before the snow started falling down here. And because of the deep freeze, it was like a crystal palace around here for almost a week. And even though I had plowed, my entire driveway was like a luge track. So that's really why I was driving to the mailbox, because I would have needed, Iger sanction type gear to get there.
Crampons.
Exactly.
Well, and now, having said that, and we also had, 2 weeks of close to zero temperatures, which made me feel like I was living on the ice planet of Hoth.
Right.
It finally broke, today, and it was, everybody I saw who was, came into our office said the same thing. Feels like summer out there.
Yep, shirt sleeve weather.
It's not. It was, 29, but it was 29 degrees warmer than it was the day before, so.
Well, I'm sure you were out running around and all of that, but I chose to circle the wagons here. And since I was post-op session, which we'll get to in a minute, I chose to use the time wisely. And I had so much of a backlog of installs to do, because a whole bunch of them had come in all of a sudden, that I decided to actually set up a second local programmer setup down there. So I have two laptops and two complete local programmer setups, and boy, does that improve productivity. So I was able to knock off something in the order of a dozen locomotives in about 3 days.
No
And
kidding.
yeah, and that made a serious dent in the backlog, which is good, because for whatever reason, and I don't know if people are psychic, but when I was very busy building the tractor shed there, incoming had pretty much gone down to nothing for about maybe a month and a half period there. And it's like, now that people somehow sense that I have the time to do this, they're sending them in 6, 8, 10 at a time. It's amazing.
Jeez. You shouldn't do as good a job as you do.
well, it's a lot of repeat business, I will say, and that's a good thing too. But and the nice thing about repeat business is there's no expectation level to create. You just basically keep doing what you did, and that's why you got them. So it's real easy. Sometimes when you have first time Loke Sound customers, you have to make sh well, sometimes they come in pre-sold on it, which is nice, but in other cases it's so different from what they're used to that you have to do a little bit of training with them to make sure they understand how full throttle works, and how you interact with the decoders and that kind of thing.
Right. Gotcha. Well, I'm glad you got caught up. In that respect, the weather was helpful.
Although I gotta say, I was wearing my thick socks down there.
Oh, there was just no way to get warm. I don't think my heat shut off for 2 weeks straight.
Yeah, basically ran continuously and
You know, I'm.
had another very expensive oil delivery today, so.
Yeah, well, I've got gas, and I just took some Rolaids, but
Badoom.
I actually got the gas bill today, and I haven't opened it yet because I figured I needed probably a couple of cocktails before I took a peek at that. But
Yeah, there's just no point in opening it sooner than later, right?
yeah, no, well, I'll write the check,
It's
but
there, you know it's bad. Why ruin today?
Exactly. Hey, it's not on our agenda, but perhaps before we talk about the main topic of discussion for the evening, which is the most recent op session that you made the mistake of inviting me to. We probably should mention that neither one of us for I believe the second or third straight year attended the Prototype Modelers meet in Cocoa Beach, unfortunately, and maybe given the weather, it might have been the place to be.
Well, yes and no. Now, the funny thing is, the Cocoa Beach coincided with cold temps for Florida down there as well. And
Yeah.
I had 1 year down there. I don't know if you were there that year,
I
but
was not.
it was exceptionally cold. And I got to tell you, Florida is considerably less fun when it's not warm.
Yeah, the shine is gone when it's icy down there.
It's really kind of the whole point, and when you're in a hotel that doesn't have any heat and it really needs it, it's really no fun. So they had a taste of that this time, and a lot of New England people that had tickets down there, their flights got canceled and they weren't able to go, which is unfortunate. But it did look like the folks that did get down there had the usual great time and were doing all the usual fun things. So it was interesting to see that from afar.
It was, and maybe next year.
Wait till next year, as they say.
We could go last Saturday. You had a somewhat impromptu operating session.
It was an unusual obsession for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is you actually showed up, which was great.
Well, thank you.
One of my regrets, though, is I did not get a photo of Scott Mason in the wild. So I just have no, it's like the Yeti. You can talk about it, but
You can't prove it.
pics or it didn't happen. If you're one of those people, well, I've got no proof. But I do have witnesses, at least.
Well, I won't deny that I was there. How's that?
There you go. That's something.
Had I messed up the layout or, pooped on your floor or something, then, maybe I would have to deny that I was there, but
So you're trying to maintain plausible deniability. Is that
absolutely,
that's the saying? Okay.
absolutely. It is a phrase that is key to our times.
Well, it was an unusual session in that many of my regulars, for whatever reason, couldn't make it, and people who normally couldn't make it, like yourself and Matt Herman of Loxon, were able to make it. So it was difficult for me to make the deadline of having everything ready for it, but I'm not sorry I did. And it was a very cool op session because I think my favorite surprise of the whole thing was how good a job Matt Herman's son Caleb did and how much he enjoyed himself running trains. The kid is like 12 and he's a crackerjack engineer. I mean, he was as good as anybody ever has here, and he really, really enjoyed himself. After everybody left, Matt kind of came over to me and he said, "Hey, you don't have one more train that Caleb could run, do you?" And I said, "Matter of fact, I do. I had a train that we hadn't gotten to, the big DNH train, and I had Caleb run that, and he was in his glories. It was a huge train with, I don't know if it had 5 or 6 units on it, and he just, an expert train handler with the right feel for the whole thing. I was impressed."
Well, first of all, thank you for the invitation. I was thrilled to be able to make it down there. It was a fun day for me. I'm not surprised that a lot of the regulars couldn't make it, being that it was the day before New Year's and 2 days New Year's Eve and 2 days before New Year's. So I'm sure a lot of people that week between Christmas and New Year's have a lot going on. It just turned out that I had a little bit of a lull during the day, and I was free and clear, and I had a great time.
Well, I know at one point you looked back at me over one of the mountains and you said, "I'm having fun." And I said, "All right, my work's done here."
Yeah, no, and that was sincere. I know that I can be sarcastic and all
No,
that stuff from
you?
time to time, but no, I was having a great time, and I was talking to Dick Elwell last night about it, and I said, I got to I participated in an op session at Mike's house weekend before last, and I noted that every layout that I operate on is operates differently.
Have no doubt about that.
And they can all have the common denominator of being well built. And yours certainly fits that category easily.
That's in part because if it's not well built, you really can't operate on it with any degree of success.
Yeah, but I mean, even the types of terrains that you're running, the jobs that you're doing, the equipment, the head-end equipment, the number of cars, the grades, is there momentum that you're dealing with? Is it a question of, solving puzzles, or do you also have to worry about your train handling skills? And one of the things that was reinforced, and I knew it from operating at your place before, but I was reminded squarely early on, is that it's not enough to, just do the job. You've got to be able to control your train, because when you build in a little bit of momentum into your locomotives, you're operating much more prototypically, and you've got to really, really think about that throttle in your hand.
Sure. Now, did you feel at all rusty at the beginning? I mean, how
If
could you
I
not?
maybe a little bit, I'll tell you, I'm always, it, to me, it's like, right before the first pitch that I throw in a ball game, there's a little bit of a few butterflies.
Interesting.
And not that I think I'll screw it up per se,
But you want to do well.
but I want to do well. And, I don't want, at the end of it all, when, the owner of the layout's looking around to make sure the car's in the right spot, doing the math. I don't want to say, "Oh my God, he put that car there and it's supposed to go over here." And I mean, sometimes that happens.
That even happens on the prototype. So,
Yeah, well, I mean, Penn Central made a career out of it, but as short as
what was interesting about that is I think we had one miscommunication in terms of that, and that is it's useful to me because the whole purpose of the paperwork is for me to convey to the operator, whoever he is, what I need him to do. And if there are ambiguities or something's misleading, it's important for me to understand what was misleading about that. So the next time I do orders, it's not like that. You know what I mean? So from a whole operational schema, what you experienced was an op session that had the benefit of, I don't know, 8 or 10 before that, where each time that gets refined. And particularly when it's the same crew most of the time, I've been able to watch people get really good at their jobs to the point where you have to crowbar some of these people out of the job that they're doing, So for example, Jim Reddington showed up to do Mahoopany as usual. If he hadn't come, I couldn't have had the session because Joe Posick wasn't there, so I took over his pits and yard duties in addition to doing everything else that I normally do during the course of a session. And that was challenging, actually. I think I had Matt Herman sub for me a few times on pits and yard while I was just busy doing other things. 'Cause his, and Dave Santos wasn't there, who's my second in command, basically, and who helps to determine the order of business and helps to herd the cats and all of that. And that was the first session ever without Dave. So, I was a little apprehensive about trying to do it and do three jobs simultaneously, but I figured, oh, what the heck? It's not we're not launching a rocket here. What can go wrong? And for the most part, I think it went
I just
okay.
asked SpaceX.
Right. For the most part, it went okay, but I'll tell you, I wasn't bored.
No, I wasn't either. And just to kind of sum up my participation in this, I had a local switcher.
Yep, I tried to give you an assignment that seemed right for you. I know you like wave rates and switching.
Yep, I was in my glory. So it took me about 4 hours. And
What did I say when I handed you the thing? I said, "See you this afternoon."
and it was the time flew by. I had just a ball. I was in my own little world. And so the thing that made it so much fun, Mike, was that the layout ran so well. There was no 050-ing of cars. I had one pulpwood car that gave me a little bit of a problem. And you don't have to worry about it. I took care of it. You'll never have to worry about that car again because you'll never find it.
Basically, dashed it to the floor.
I Gronk slammed it, but no. No, and I called you over and I said, "Hey, I think you might have an issue with this car." And you went, "Oh yeah, I know this car."
Yep.
But beyond that, it was as good as it could possibly get. There's some grades that you've got to contend with when, you're cutting cars loose
Like in Laceyville.
in Laceyville, in the passing siding. And that was a little bit of a challenge because I couldn't just drop cars. I had to make sure everything was okay. I had to make sure the brakes were set.
Right.
And so it was a challenge, but it was a fun challenge.
Well, the other thing is you're interacting with other trains that are going by, and sometimes you have to clear for them. I did question the decision to for your local to take the main and run this giant train through the siding, but that seemed to go okay.
Well, that's my Rutland background.
Ah.
We don't worry about other trains on the railroad because there aren't any.
Well, I'll
So
tell
it's not.
you'd never have gotten away with that if Dave Santos had been here.
Yeah, no, I know, but I figured, every it was kind of a slow day in terms of the number of trains that were out, and I know that had a lot to do with, the number of people that were there.
Well, it also had a lot to do with my ability to organize and dispatch, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So, and there were like a couple more people there maybe than usual, so I kind of two-man crewed some things. Neil wasn't supposed to be there and then called me that morning and said he'd like to just stop by and say hi, so I said sure. But I really didn't have any train for him to run.
Yeah. It's great to see Neil. And then I was basically done with my job at that point. And I was waiting to clear town, but I had to wait for the train to come through. And I just, I'm like,
You did some rail fanning.
yeah, I did some rail fanning. So it was nice. It was, nice day. The ride was, when you're looking forward to something, even the ride there and back was fun.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear that, and hopefully it's not a one-off, and take the planets aligned to get you back down. Anytime you get the urge, you're always welcome.
Well, no, I appreciate that, and the same thing,
And that goes true for
goes.
Dick, by the way. I hope he understands that. He doesn't need a written invitation to operate down here if he'd ever like that.
No, and I think he would, and I think the issue for him is that it's an hour for me, but it's 3.5 hours for him,
Oh, I get it.
and
That's why I've only operated in his layout once.
yeah, and. So I think you know what I'm saying about, the similarities, but the differences that are built in even with the similarities.
Sure.
Dick models a different era. I think his main line might be a little longer.
Although, in all
You're
fairness,
running.
you didn't run the entire layout, so
Oh no, I
you
didn't
don't
at all.
really have a good feel for the length of the main line. I should have had you run one road train just so you could get a feel for it. I mean,
Yeah.
it's a 20-minute run. That's that it would surprise you, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we were discussing, So I don't want to jump into this next thing yet. I didn't know if there was anything else that you wanted to mention with regards to the obsession.
Well, you mentioned, how the layout ran, and I was actually talking about this with Jason Fontaine, who we're going to mention in a minute.
We just did.
And I'm going to say what I said to him, and that is, when you have your first obsession, I don't care how much debug you've done in advance, you are going to turn up problems. And I remember well my first obsession here, and how it went, and being a little demoralized afterwards, because I had really tried very hard to have everything right, and I ended up with a legal pad full of issues to address, and what I told him was that over time, from obsession to obsession, you take this list of issues and you work them, and you just keep knocking them off. And at some point, you run out of those issues. And now, from obsession to obsession, sometimes there's no issues. Sometimes there's one. But the point is, it's not, 20. And it is a fact, I think. And you see, if you this is your experience too, but the more you run a layout, the better it works.
Well, there's no question, and the reason it does is because it forces you to address whatever maintenance issues need to be addressed.
But even when you're done with those maintenance issues, it seems like the actual running of it helps to keep it running well somehow.
Sure. Yeah, I truly believe that. And I can cite your layout as an example. I can cite Dick Elwell's layout as an example.
Confluence is the same way.
My Confluence is the same way. There you're all holding now, regular operating sessions or semi-regular operating sessions. And your rail isn't getting cruddy. If there was a point issue somewhere, you knew about it and you dealt with it. It just, I don't know, maybe it's karma, but I think more than anything else, it's just, careful oversight of what's going on with the layout in general. Dick has, for the amount of operating sessions he has, the amount of cars he's got on that layout, the amount of trains he runs in a session, the amount of operators that he's got working at any given time, the problems are almost zero from
Right.
session to session. And I think we talked about on the last podcast, we're trying to figure this out, that Dick is in the process of switching out, replacing all of his Hank's Craft switch machines for Tortoise switch machines. And it's a little bit of a nightmare for him. I talked to him last night and he was under the layout and he said, I've replaced 24 machines. And he said one of them was like free and clear of any impediments. And it was, he said, it took me like 20 minutes.
Right. For
But
one of them.
you know that the process is you install the machine, you put the wires, and then you got to go up top. You got to crawl out from under the layout, go up top to make sure that it's throwing properly.
Well, does he use a linkage? Because I don't really know what exactly he's doing, but I mean, normally when you're installing a tortoise, is that what he's using?
Yeah.
So normally when you're installing a tortoise, you're making a slot underneath the throw bar, and the wire goes up, and you have to have that little quarter inch or more slot for the wire to go back and forth in, and it's under the throw bar. So if you haven't installed a turnout, how do you do that?
I don't know. I really, really don't know.
Next time you're talking to him, ask him that, because I am curious about that.
Yeah.
It just seems, and now if there's an existing linkage in place, I'm sure there's a way to get the tortoise to work that linkage, and it's all underneath, which would be a lot easier.
Right. He's a little bit of a magician, as you know. So, I don't know, maybe he's miracling this thing. So speaking of Jason, so Jason Fontaine, who's a mutual friend and a mutual friend of Dick Elwell's, is it's either today or tomorrow is conducting his first ever op session. And I mentioned I
Just that
spoke.
fact alone blew me away because he's had a layout forever.
Yeah, in fact, his layout was in Great Model Railroads a few years ago, the Combeck publication, and it's he's a very, very thorough, precise modeler. And it, you know, that trickles down to his wiring and his bench work and his backdrops and his lighting and everything. Dick has helped him quite a bit on the layout. But I talked to Dick last night and he said, yeah, he said Jason's having his, he was down at Mike's house picking up some locomotives
Yeah, he was trying to get them done in time for this pick your op session. So I found a way to rearrange things and just jump on this big batch that he brought over, and hopefully it all went well for him, or is about to go well.
Yeah, it was either today or tomorrow, and Dick's analogy was he's like a cat on a hot tin roof right now. He said he's a little nervous. So Dick was going to go over there and operate, and I'm sure when I talk to Dick later in the week, he'll have an update for me, which I'm looking forward to because Jason's a nice guy. I've known him for many, many years, and as I mentioned to you, his wife Pam is a sweetheart.
Yep, no, they're very, very nice people, and I until we were chatting pre-show, I hadn't really made the connection that you had known him for a long time also. But he's, I guess he's been coming down here for, it's got to be a couple of years now, and we also spent a very pleasant day helping Neil Schofield build his helix on his layout. So, you know, he's just a nice guy that is intelligent and gets it, and he's trying to do everything right. In fact, I finally browbeat him into getting a loc programmer, and he just picked up a PC because he's an Apple guy.
Yep.
So he just picked up a PC to run the software, and when the dust settles, he's going to come down here with the PC, and I'm going to load the software and set up the programmer and show him how it all works.
Yep. So before we jump into, kind of what's next for you now that this op session's out of the way, we should probably inform our listeners who are expecting to hear our mystery guest tonight that there has been a slight change in those plans.
Mystery guest has been rescheduled for not a whole month from now, but not tomorrow. He's traveling on business.
Now, wait a second, wait a second, wait a second. Stop. We don't know that it's a he.
Okay.
It's a mystery guest. I think we should leave it at that.
I guess there's a little less mystery now. I'm sorry.
Wow. All right.
I think
We'll need to talk after this
my
podcast.
career as a double agent, I think, doesn't have any legs.
Yeah, so we're shooting for a an end of the month recording, or 2 weeks from now recording time to get him or her in here
And you know, we're going out on a limb as usual on this because we don't even know if a three-person recording is going to be viable. So it's totally an experiment, and we might record it and determine that the sound is garbage and we just can't do it. Or it might be just fine. I have no idea how it's going to go.
Well, if I'm on it, the sound's going to be garbage.
I'm not talking about content.
Oh, all right. Okay. So, one of the purposes of this op session for you was to kind of kick off the next round of work sessions on the layout.
In a way, I mean, I suppose, and I did kind of want to show everybody what I'd been working on for 2 months, you know, and I was glad Neil showed up because of anybody, you know, he's an experienced structure builder, so I knew he'd appreciate some of the little crazy things that were done on the grain mills that, you know, most people just wouldn't even show up in their radar, but I knew he would see it. So, you know, I was glad that he showed up, and I just kind of wanted to get the place cleaned up, and there's nothing like an op session to motivate you to do that. I don't know that it would have happened, you know, without that impetus. And just kind of get back to doing it. I know Mike Confalone was just, you know, pushing and pushing on it because he hates to be the only guy holding op sessions, and you know, he likes coming down here and operating. So I mean, I'm flattered by that, and I frankly like having everybody over and doing it. So it was nice to sort of put a period on a particular phase of what was going on construction-wise, and you know, get the layout going for what it's all designed for anyway, you know. And of course, with everything cleaned up, the last thing you want to be doing is making another giant mess. But the fact of the matter is, there really aren't any more giant messes to make. Because with that whole, the room basically where you were working, the original train room, with that whole room now presentable, really the only thing that needs dirt thrown at it is that ransom area when you walk in on the left where the big paper mill is going to go. And unfortunately, it is the first thing you see when you walk in, so it does kind of make me go, that would be kind of high impact to not have that be an eyesore, you know? So I kept looking at it, and I was torn because, on the one hand, with all of this construction, this physical construction of structures and scenery on the layout, it really has been a long time since I've been able to justify spending much time doing cars and locomotives and kit bashing and weathering and all that other stuff that used to be pretty much the only thing I was doing for many years. And I miss it. It's not like I'm not going to do that anymore. It's just, I've had other priorities, and some of this stuff takes long periods of time. So for the first time, I felt like I actually had to consider some options, So you could make a case for, on the one hand, doing something different for a change and enjoying that and trying to get some things done that maybe wouldn't get done once you start the addition project in the spring. There is that still looming. And I have a feeling that's going to suck up all the oxygen in the room until it doesn't. So you could make a case for, all right, what do I want to do most? What's the low-hanging fruit here? What think about what you should be doing, what you want to be doing. On the other hand, I'm so in structure mode right now that there won't be an easier time for me to get the mindset to tackle that paper mill, And by building that structure, which, again, using the old if not now, when, right? By doing that structure, it enables me to do the relatively easy sceneking of that area for the most part, and can basically remove the last unscenic area other than, Pittston Yard, which is going to be moved, so there's no way I'm going to be sceneking that in this building, where it is now. So you could make a case for taking that approach, So I thought about it, talked with some people about it, and you know what I decided?
What'd you decide?
I'm doing both.
Let me put my surprised look on. You love a
Well,
challenge.
yeah, but you know what? Compared to what I just did, this will be cake.
Yeah.
I've got like 2.5 months here. I can approach this from a leisurely standpoint. If you can build 5 grain facilities in 5 weeks, I could think I can build a paper mill and do a little locomotive kit bashing in 2.5 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I should be able to walk and chew gum here,
Yeah.
So we're gonna find out if indeed I can. But that's the plan. So when Dave came over last night, we spent a lot of time trying to get the proportions right. So I had begun this process and then put everything in a box to do something else and hadn't gotten back to it. I felt like I needed to reacquaint myself with the whole project. So we dragged everything out from where I had stashed it and started looking at the prototype pictures and trying to get the proportions. And how when you're looking at pictures, there's certain fixed things like the type of window and the height of it and the number of them that really help you to sort of plan out how large you're going to build this structure and how you're going to lay it out. So the more I had gone from trying to do this paper mill as a kit bash to basically a pure scratch build. It's actually going to be much easier to scratch build it than to try to take some Walther's series of kits and bash it into what this thing actually is. And it's not a complicated mill, but it's got certain specific aspects to it that if you don't do it, you're not going to capture the look of the prototype. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was when I looked at this mill, it's brick construction for a good portion of it, And then it's got the usual additions onto it. There's a concrete block, auxiliary loading area. There's some kind of metal second story built on top of one of the brick things. It's part of what makes it interesting to me to build it. But it's important for me to get the main part, the brick part of it right. And that portion has, well, the window openings are in the 20s, let's just put it that way.
As far as number of windows go,
And so it's a lot of window openings to cut. And if you've ever done that in brick sheet material, you know that it's a little bit on the thick side, and it's just, it's drudgery to cut, because all of these are sort of those, I don't know if you can picture, the 20 pane industrial windows with sort of like a little tilt out section. I think Tichy makes them. So those openings all have to be cut very closely to fit, to close tolerances. So, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, boy, I'm going to be here all winter, cutting these openings and filing them and all of that. So I'm just putting it out there to say, and actually actually sent a message to Mr. Jimmy Simmons, who I've not heard back from yet, but I wanted to ask him how long his brick material comes in, and if I were going to use that and have him laser cut the openings, what would he need to do that? And I'd have to figure out, what that would cost and all that. Then I remembered this other guy I know who has a laser cutter.
All right, so let me kind of tell you what is required. First of all, I wouldn't. Are you talking about cutting it out of working from sheet plastic as opposed to sheet basswood? Was that what your original?
Well, all right. So, that I tend to work mainly in plastic, and I've got plenty in stock, plenty of brick sheet, and it's Walther's material, but it's good stuff, and it is designed to sort of interlock, so you can go do various heights in various lengths, and do it pretty much without visible seams, so it's good material to work with, and I'm used to it. The thing about it is that, it's not thin. It's probably, I don't know, it's probably 25, 30 thousandths, you know what I mean? So again, cutting openings in it is kind of a bear, this building is about 44 inches long in total, so it's no trivial structure.
I would not recommend doing it in plastic. First of all, plastic works well for smaller buildings. The problem with it is it's because it doesn't have a grain, it's very, very difficult to brace it so that it doesn't have show, some kind of wave in it. And I'm talking about when you're working with longer lengths.
You saw Mahoupany, right?
Yes. But you could even
I built that out of gator board and then just laminated plastic siding to it in that case.
Right. So it's a whole different animal. And it's that raised seam, corrugated siding anyway. I think if you were trying to work with sheet brick and you were working with something that was 40 inches long, I think over the course of that 40 inches, it would be very, very difficult to keep it straight.
Well, and I was also thinking that the Jimmy's wooden brick material would be a hell of a lot easier to cut openings in.
Well, and if you were going to go that route, you'd want him to laser cut the openings, and the reason is because it's an eighth inch thick. The benefit of the material being 8 inches thick is it's very stable. You still will need to brace it from behind,
Sure, that's no problem.
but when you do, it's going to be completely true. But to try to cut out window openings in an eighth inch sheet basswood is tough to do.
But he would need basically a CAD drawing, or is that what he would work from?
Yeah, all he needs is a 2D CAD drawing. You don't need to draw in the bricks. All you need to do is draw the outline of the walls, draw the location of the windows and the size of the windows and doors. And then if you want brick sill concrete sills and lintels above the above and below the windows and doors, you would just you could either draw them in or not. You could indicate to him that you want that, and he does the rest.
I see. That would be a lot easier, I have to admit.
It's so you're trading some money for ease of construction. When you my initial concern with working with brick laser engraved wood was how it was going to look. Was it going to look like brick laser cut wood?
Oh no, I've seen what he's done with this stuff. I mean, it looks
Yeah.
fabulous.
Yeah,
And
it's
actually, that mill, Dick's mill, is all that laser cut brick, right?
It sure is.
Yeah, and that looks tremendous.
And the so it's so easy to work with.
Did you color that with pan pastels? Is that what you did?
No, I here's the easy part. I spray painted it with Krylon terracotta,
Rattle
which is
can.
a rattle can. It's a flat paint. You can get
Just
it
to
at
get a
Walmart.
base color there.
Yeah, so then I went back and I highlighted some bricks, but kind of the piece that ties it all together is the mortar.
I see.
And it's a I used a material called Fast and Final. It's made by DAP.
Spackling kind of thing.
It's spackle, yeah.
Yep.
And you spread it on with your finger, and you just keep spreading it and spreading it until it's off the surface. You don't have to wipe it off or anything. You just keep working it in, and it tones down the brick, and the spackle picks up just a hint. It's white. It
Yep.
picks up just a hint of the brick color, so it tones itself down,
Okay.
and it's fantastic.
Huh.
It is the easiest effect you can possibly create in structure building, as far as I'm concerned, and I've tried them all.
Well, I've got a couple of buddies who are real good with CAD. I'll have to see if I can call in a marker or two and see if I can get that drawn up.
Well, I mean, if you've got a sketch of it with dimensions, I'd be happy to take a crack at it for you.
Really? In your spare time?
I mean, I'd have to look at it to kind of see what I'd be up against, to be able to give you an honest answer of, whether I could do it in a timely manner.
Yep.
I wouldn't want to keep you waiting, but I'd be happy to take a look at it. And basically, I just need, a ruler sketch with the, proper dimensions.
Well, the amount of time that would save me would make it worth waiting, actually. That would enable me to, do some other stuff while I'm waiting for that. And then if that comes in good to go, I can have this thing together in no time once I receive that,
And not that I'm looking to take, anything away from Jimmy, but my buddy and I, who co-own the laser, discovered the secret of the brick pattern, and we've tried it on some test pieces, and it works just fine. I haven't used the laser for any kind of, well, I haven't used it at all. We've had it for 1.5 years. But he uses it on a fairly regular basis, and I think, if you're willing to spring for the material, we might even be able to cut this for you.
So you mean like blank material?
Yeah,
Interesting.
it's just 8-inch thick basswood, plain basswood.
I doubt it's 8 inch thick.
I'm sorry, eight 1/8 inch.
Okay.
Not 8 inch. It's 8 inch thick. It's a block, basically.
Really? You carve everything away from it that doesn't look like a
Yeah,
brick.
and it ends up looking like the president's head. But it's crazy. I don't know.
What is the largest size of the sheet?
Well, the largest sizes that the sheets come in are 6 inches wide by 24 inches long.
24 inches. So, and you can orient the burn any way you want.
Well, if you want Asian brick, yes, we can orient it for you. If you want American brick, then we can do that too.
Jeez, that's politically incorrect.
I know, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, in other words, the building being 44 inches long, you could do with two sheets if you can lay it out that way.
Yes, now where you kind of run into a potential problem is when you're butting up, a seam like that.
Right, but if you only have one seam, you put a downspout or something.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you can put some downspouts or it's funny, like a lot of the projects that I'm looking to do, that the mill store in particular, everywhere where a seam would fall, there's like a bump out in the building. So, there's nothing to contend with. And the same held true for Dick's Paper Mill. It just coincidentally worked out that way, that I never had to butt two pieces up against each other. So yeah, the answer is yes. It can be worked. Now, it may take a couple of hours of experimentation, on my part before, I'm able to give you something back that's acceptable. But quite honestly, Mike, my last contribution to your layout didn't go so well.
Trying to remember what that was now.
That was the Envirotex fiasco.
That went largely pretty good. You shouldn't sell yourself short on that. He's still
Oh,
beating himself up for one cup of improperly mixed Envirotex out of how many mixes was that? Maybe 20?
At least,
At least, right?
but you're only as good as your last pour.
Well, I mean, that's true, but.
So I'd like to make it up to you. So if I can help out with this, and quite frankly, I think my buddy's dying to have me come over and get some hours on this thing. And
It sounds like an interesting project, actually. So, I guess the next thing I need to do is do some kind of rudimentary drawing. And what I'll also do, the
what,
picture I'm following.
I thought it was a paper mill.
Yes.
Oh, you just said it was a rudimentary.
You're really gonna go with that, huh?
I'm sticking with it. Yeah, it's late and I'm tired, so
Okay.
and I'm old. I'm old now.
Don't talk to me about old. Dick and I have no sympathy for you.
Oh, so you're gonna throw yourself in that boat, huh?
I bet I'm closer to him than you.
No.
No, I'm not, am I?
No, you're not even close.
Okay, well that's good.
Okay.
I'll take a picture. The picture, the best picture I have of this mill in my era is actually in a Mike Bednar book, and it's like a double center spread picture in one of his books. So I'll just take like a camera phone picture of it so you can see what I'm trying to do. But I'll do a sketch with the with the openings and what have you, and email it to you and just tell me what you think.
Sure. Happy to do so. Happy to do so. Well, that takes care of my contribution for the evening.
Yeah, well, we've got a plan of action here. I like that. Now this will be done by the next podcast recording, of course, right?
It depends on when the next podcast recording is, isn't it? Doesn't
Well, we can have something to
it?
talk about.
Exactly. There'll be something to talk about, whether it's,
We can talk about how
it
much
was.
wood we burned to a crisp without.
Well, and that's the point. I mean, I don't want to do that either. And my buddy has a greater sense of, how these things work, and he was the one that figured out the brick pattern. So I'm going to be somewhat reliant upon him so that I'm not burning up a lot of wood.
Gotcha.
I think, that takes us down to our last topic on the agenda tonight, Mike. Speaking of structures, a good friend of mine and someone who's fairly well known to the structure building community and the National Model Railroad Association, a gentleman by the name of Marv Kempner passed away last week. Marv was 97 years old and lived a great life. And Marv was a Craftsman Structure Show Hall of Fame inductee in 2009, and was a NMRA master modeler. He was just a fantastic model railroader, but more importantly, he was just a wonderful, wonderful guy, who kind of took a liking to me, took me under his wing a little bit, and I, certainly benefited from my association with him. For those of you who don't know Marv, Marv was an interesting guy, and the interest had nothing to do with trains in a lot of cases. He was a pilot in World War II, and after the war, he became an entrepreneur. He owned a number of radio stations, including a station, WINE, in Buffalo, New York. He went on to become an amazingly successful entrepreneur. Among his achievements was he was the first person to produce a daily sports television show with a female host, female anchor. Her name was Jane Chastain, and it was a program out of New York City, which he syndicated. He also owned the rights to a television game. It was it was the first interactive television game. Mike, you remember the show Dialing for Dollars?
Absolutely.
Well, this was kind of along those lines. That the game was called
Wasn't
TV.
that kind of a local show?
Yeah, and this was it started out as a local thing, and it became more national in its scope. It was called TV Pow, and basically, players through their phone watched while they were on the phone talking to this television station, saw these images on the screen, and when the images crossed through a bullseye, they said "pow" into the phone, and it blew up the somehow interfaced with the television. It blew up the thing, and they won prizes. So that, for 1950s, early 1960s, this actually went, believe it or not, this lasted into the early 1980s. People still playing this game in various television stations across the United States. But his where he made his fortune was he owned the patent on the first auto dialer. And we were having breakfast one morning in Cocoa Beach, and he was telling me about it in a very humble way, and it struck me that, there were questions that had to be asked. And I said, "Marv," I said, "if you don't mind me asking," I said, "can you give me a little more background?" He said, "Well," he said, we own this, I own this patent." And he said, "the first time it was used, we licensed it to the Republican National Committee. And they used it when Ronald Reagan ran for re-election in 84. And he said that the week before the election at 6 o'clock, the Tuesday before the election, everybody's phone rang. And it was, when you picked up the phone, it was a recorded voice. It was Ronald Reagan saying, "please vote for me next Tuesday," and whatever his message was.
So it's all his fault.
It's all his fault.
All these robocalls.
He said it worked out really well. He said, "I got 25 cents every time the phone got picked up."
Jeez.
I said, "Marv, how many times did the phone get picked up?" Because I remember picking up the phone and hearing Ronald Reagan's voice, and it was the first time anything like that had ever happened. And I jumped back and I thought, "I got the president on the phone." And I realized in short order it was a recorded message. But
Right.
he said, "Well, the first night it was 48 million times."
My God.
He made $12 million in one
One
evening.
night. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. Marv had a nice life for himself. He lived in a beautiful home in a gated community in the greater Fort Lauderdale area, and I had an opportunity to visit him on many occasions. And he was a wonderful structure builder. Won several first place awards at NMRA national competitions, and I miss him. If you want to read an interesting book, it's entitled "I Can't Wait Until Monday Morning," by Marv Kempner, and it chronicles his life in broadcasting. And it's an
Does
easy read.
that imply that he just couldn't wait to get to work?
And that was really kind of his life. He really, really loved what he did. He was instrumental in helping me promote my DVDs when they first came out. He was a very, very strong advocate of my business and my skills, and a lot of the notoriety that I gained when I started putting my name out there was part and parcel to his advice and his help.
You know what the old saying is, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Well, and I will tell you that was Marv, and so again, I would recommend the book. It's entitled "I Can't Wait Till Monday Morning," and our sympathies go out to Marv's family and all his many friends, and it was a life well lived, that's for sure. So that's it. I think we beat this thing up pretty good.
Well, it's not a bad effort, and we'll see what kind of an effort we manage next time.
It can only get better, right?
You never know.
All right, Mike, thank you.